Thanks very much. It's great to be here this afternoon. I know I'm standing between you and dinner, so I'll make sure I stay on time this afternoon as well. I will say, from the University of Missouri, I don't know if the others from Missouri speaking this morning talked to you about the fact that it's been a little tough getting around campus the last couple of weeks. We've had students that have been picketing on campus. First time since I've really been there, it's happened. They've decided with our football loss to Indiana a couple weeks ago that perhaps the Tigers was not a fitting mascot any longer for the University of Missouri. So when I left, Possums was winning. We play dead at home and get killed on the road. So I realize I'm the token economist left on the last part of the first day of the program, so I want to make sure that we get started. I was joking back there with Dr. Patterson that, you know, I wish I could actually say I could hold my arm out and it would say 150 on it, that I'm one of those AI technicians that could do 150 heifers in a day, but my hands are much better on a computer keyboard than they are in a heifer. So I want to spend a little bit of time maybe looking at this from a different perspective. I want to make sure that, boy, when you look at where we are today, it doesn't really matter. Everything works. It's been a phenomenal year in 2014, and we're likely going to have another phenomenal year in 2015. That's not really why I want to talk with you all this afternoon. I want to focus on where we're headed in front. And right now, I think, is the time to build that risk management strategy, because I don't think we're going to have record cattle prices forever. It wasn't that long ago, I remember, that when we had corn prices that were $6.50 or $7 a bushel, the idea of ever going below $4 was ludicrous. And where are we today? All right, so I just don't want us to forget in the cattle industry that, you know, yeah, so let's enjoy where we are today, but I think we'll be lower in terms of cattle prices over the next 5 to 10 years. I didn't say 2015, okay? So I think it's important to think about how we want to invest in the herd. I, for a minute, go, yeah, you know, we're at the lowest number of cattle and calves we've had in decades. You see the 87.7 million head that we started 2014 with and where that compares relative to the 1950s. So record low cattle numbers. That's not going to change anytime soon. It's going to take us a long time to talk about growing cattle inventories in front of us. I sometimes actually like to look at calf crop in that same long-term graph, because we fell below the 1950s a lot earlier in terms of calves than we did cattle and calves. And we've been chasing total beef supplies of late by growing cattle to heavier weights. And that's going to continue, I think, in the short run, trying to make sure that we get as much beef supplies on the market as we can. Being at record cattle prices because of record low cattle numbers is not the mix I'd like to talk about. I sure wish we were at record cattle prices because of record demand. And we don't want to lose sight of the fact why we're at record prices in the cattle industry today. I don't know what cow-calf returns look like in this part of the country, but it's a phenomenal year. Perhaps we're going to be in a situation where we actually have to pay, heaven forbid, income tax in 2014. Let's figure out what we can do here over the next couple of months to make certain that that doesn't happen to us, right? All right, so I joke and I go, but frankly, on top of that, I think many of us were probably eligible under USDA's LFP program for some retroactive payments that easily could have added another $100 to that per cow return in 2014, and we just haven't been in this situation before in the cattle industry. So a time where we might actually have funds to invest. So, you know, I go, before I can really get into the meat, we have to talk about where projections are going. So I do long-term cattle projections. I always say they will be wrong. Maybe perhaps the chances of them being correct are about the same probability as the Kansas City Royals winning the World Series. So 1 in 29, maybe. I might say 1 in 30 after this year. We'll see how the rest of the season unfolds. But I don't want to look backwards. At the values we have for cattle today, we have to look ahead. I think some of the genetic improvements that we can talk about make a lot more difference when we talk about $2.50 a pound feeder calves instead of $1.75. So I think it is important. I just remind you that I'm really doing this because I need a baseline. I want to be able to compare some of the genetics that we get, or genetic advantage we can get by comparing it to that baseline. So this is it. You can all laugh. All right? I am bold enough to lay out there that long-term cattle price path because I want you to understand what's driving some of the results that I moved to. And again, it'll be wrong. All right, so let me stop for a minute and go. I don't want anyone to say, Scott Brown came here today and said Fed cattle prices will never be below $1 a pound ever again. All right, on average, that's what the models will suggest in front. There's a lot of risk around that single line estimate. Some of the outcomes would certainly talk about Fed cattle prices below a dollar a pound. But declining cattle prices driving the results that you see. So I want to look at kind of, let's take an academic approach here for a minute and talk about net present value to value those bred heifers. I got to make some assumptions. So again, future input and output prices. We talked about what I have in for cattle prices. I've got to talk about some type of interest rate because a dollar I get from that heifer in year one is worth a lot more to me today than a dollar I'm going to get from that heifer 9 or 10 years down the road. So I have to decide a discount rate that I want to use. And oh, by the way, calving success. I was glad to see the other two speakers because I go, when it's all said and done, do I actually get a calf every year from that bred heifer? It makes a lot of difference in what I might be willing to pay for that bred heifer. And other things like what kind of loan am I going to take out on that heifer? All those things are important. But from an output standpoint, what's my return on investment and what's my break-even price? as a couple of things that we can talk about. You can see, if you're interested in looking at the calculator that we have at Missouri, the link to that calculator. Again, an Excel spreadsheet-based approach where you can enter your own numbers and your own thoughts about all of those inputs. But having done that, I would say the baseline value of a bred heifer today is about $3,000. Combination of the input and output prices and discount rates that I put in front of you would have suggested a bred heifer on average is worth about $3,000. Now, that's not really why I came this afternoon, but for a minute, let's make sure we understand what I'm doing. I'm trying to look at what can I afford to pay for her when at the end of her life she breaks even. All right? So that assumes a lot of no risk, right? And I go, we know it's a lot more risky proposition, but if you look at the cumulative net present value, all right, so you'll notice it goes down through 2018. Lower cattle prices and the fact I got to service some loan against that heifer makes her net present value actually go down for the first few years. We actually, once we pay off that loan, we can actually talk about that cumulative net present value starting to move in the other direction. Again, at the end of the period when I sell her for coal value, it's zero. So that's the calculation that gives me I can afford to pay $3,000. It's like knowing with certainty I'm going to get a calf every year, and the input and output prices that I entered gives me back that zero net present value. But I want to run just a scenario or two for us. So if you look at what happens if I lost that year two calf, that's just a $1,000 difference in what I'm willing to pay for that bred heifer given the approach that I've used. So getting a calf every year is the most important aspect, I think, of trying to figure out what I'm willing to pay for that heifer. And this is where I go, if I can use better genetics and I can use AI to get those better genetics, here's part of the value that I should be attributing to that bred heifer. Now, I want to make certain if I lose one later in her life, that's not as problematic as losing one out of the gate. So only about a $500 decline in value losing a calf in year six. But the last one, so I go, it's more than, so better genetics I think give us more than just a greater probability of calving every year. And so I did something fairly simple. I say, what if I got 10% higher feeder cattle prices? All right, so why did I run that scenario? So if I look at St. Joe, Missouri feeder cattle reports from AMS, so there's more than an average price, right? There's some range around that price. So why do we pay high prices for some animals and lower prices for others? Oh, yeah, somebody raised their hand once when they didn't mean to, right? No, I think they knew something in many cases. Well, so sometimes maybe that's happened, but many times I think they knew something about those calves. And guess what the average, the difference from average to the highest prices paid was? About 10%. All right? So if I assume I can get 10% higher feeder cattle prices than the average that I plugged in, that's worth about $600 to me. So start thinking about those things together. I get a calf every year, and all of a sudden that calf's worth more when I decide to sell it. Doesn't that add a lot to the bottom line return of what it's worth? All right, so my academic side for just a second. Now I'm going to come back and talk about what's some real-world data, and how do those two things compare? Because I think that's the interesting thing. So Show Me Select Heifer program. I know you've heard from Dave Patterson over this morning. But I go, what a great opportunity to start to look at some longer-term data and what kind of value we see back out of that Show Me Select Heifer program. Just for a minute, you see some of the accomplishments from the Show Me Select Heifer program. Certainly has provided a growing interest in AI use in Missouri. And I think a lot of producers are continuing to look at the opportunities provided by the Show Me Select Heifer program. If you look at who's been involved, and I go, this is all very important to the Show Me Select process. I think, frankly, that $75 million contribution to the Missouri economy is, it could be a low estimate, but a lot of folks in the industry been involved. I frankly like the second slide here, the marketing component. The fact that I can look at now 128 sales at over 10 locations that provides me some data about the value associated with those Show Me Select heifers. So, if we look for just a minute, so tier one, so heifers that meet the minimum requirements that were natural service sired have a baseline of about $1,700 over the fall 2010 through spring 2014 sales. All of a sudden, if I though have a tier one bred heifer that was AI bred, on average over that period of time brought an additional $276 a heifer. Now, if I step up and look at the tier two, so higher accuracy sires used to meet tier two. If I have a tier two natural service sired heifer, she's brought an additional $232 over the baseline, all right, tier one natural service. All of a sudden, I go all the way to the right and talk about a tier two AI bred heifer. She brought $407. So there's certainly added value showing up in the Show Me Select heifer program from that. And this will be what Dave talks about all the time in terms of what's the added value from Show Me Select heifers. But I just remind you, what was the average bred heifer price in Oklahoma City over that same period of time? A lot less. About $400 less than the $1,700 that he shows as a baseline oftentimes in the slides that he does. So I think when you look at our tier one natural service sired bred heifer, that's a much different heifer than the average that we would have seen at an Oklahoma City market. Now, I will say there's a lot of problem in doing this kind of direct comparison between that Oklahoma City market and what we have in terms of Show Me Select. But I think it starts to show some of the value that we're getting from the data. I, for a minute, go $800 over tier two AI bred heifer over Oklahoma City average. That's amazingly close to my academic approach. Just food for thought. All right, so for a minute, I want to make sure that I think about the sector level for a minute. So I've been doing some work with a master's student at Missouri that looks at demand for beef by quality grade for a second. This is my, put this in your pocket to decide how you want to reduce risk on your operation. It's meant to, again, look at demand by quality grade, because I start looking at boxed beef prices, and I say, you know what, if I can throw more prime carcasses in the mix, isn't that another way to add value to that bred heifer over time? And you notice I didn't say I want to shoot for choice. That choice select spread gets mighty narrow at times. There's a lot of seasonality to that choice select spread. But if I can talk about that high-end quality, and okay, so I've heard this a lot of times. So, okay, Scott, we can feed these cattle long enough, they'll grade prime. And that's not what I want. I want cattle that are going to grade prime, that are fed a a reasonable amount of time. But there's a lot of value associated given the relative prices for box beef. All right, so maybe a graph or a table that's too confusing for a second, but these are demand equations by grade. For a minute, if you look at the top row, top two rows, demand for prime beef. All right, so I encourage you to look at the red diagonal that I have for you. So the own price elasticity in this case, so we're most elastic prime on prime. So what's that mean for us if that's a correct demand elasticity? Increasing supplies of prime beef probably has less of an effect on the prime price than, let's say, increasing the amount of choice or branded product in the market. Okay, so I often hear if we just increase prime supplies, we'll get rid of the premium that's available for prime. Looking at that own price elasticity, to me, suggests that we can increase prime supplies and maybe continue to hold significant premiums for prime product. I sometimes like to look at these off-diagonal elements because what's going to happen to the pork and chicken industries in 2015? We're going to expand production. What's going to happen when we expand pork and chicken production? Pork and chicken prices are going to fall. How much substitution do we have to pork and chicken in these different beef types? So again, look at the column here that says pork and chicken. We have the largest substitute elasticity down here with select grade. So I'm going to have most competition at the lower quality grades related to pork and chicken. I may get the largest slide in select prices as pork and chicken prices slide. Now the last column for me, trend. All right, so things we couldn't explain with prices and income for a second. If those trends are correct, what's going to happen over the next 10 years? Demand for select will weaken over the next decade. Demand for prime will grow the most. Now, so I started this afternoon by saying I don't like record cattle prices because of record low supplies. I'm more interested in demand. Here's one where I would say our results show us demand for prime is going to grow over the next decade. Is that the part of the industry I'm most interested in supplying over the next decade? That's something that I think you should look at from an aggregate standpoint. Now, I turn that back around and go, Thompson Research Center, another farm in our MU system that Dr. Patterson's been very closely working with. The nice thing here is all of those steer calves have been fed in western Kansas for a number of years, so enough data here to start looking at what are those steer calves, what do they look like by feeding them in western Kansas, feeding what are some higher quality steers. So I've quickly for you graphed from low to high. So yes, Dr. Patterson didn't make all of them profitable over that period. So calves that were born 2008 to 12, about an average profitability. All right, so what am I saying about profitability? If they would have taken those Thompson steer calves and sold them at St. Joe the day they went to western Kansas, I want to know how much more or less money did they bring by feeding them. So those animals, on average, were about $125 per head. A lot of variability still from top to bottom, but overselling them as calves, those steer calves brought about another $125 in the feed yard. So similar again to what I said that bred heifer might be worth if you could get 10% more value for those calves. I didn't stand up here and say those in the cow-calf business need to get in the cattle feeding business. What I like about this data is it provides us some information back on the carcass quality that we have and what's that really worth back in that cow-calf herd. So does quality affect profitability? Index all those returns and look at the carcasses of graded prime, choice, select. You can certainly see a strong correlation that those cattle that were grading prime were the ones that brought the most money. Now, I won't say there were cattle that graded choice as well that brought good money as well. It just depended on feed efficiency in many cases in terms of where those fit in relative to the other carcasses. So if I tie this all back together, you know, that academic approach that I took would say, heifers that calve every year are worth $500 to $1,000 more than heifers that lose one calf during their lifetime. Selling calves for above average market values adds nearly $600 to that bottom line. But the reason I really took those two alternatives, using better genetics, I think can drive both of those results. It's not a 0-1 game in any sense, but you can increase the likelihood of a calf that feeds well, grades well, and a heifer that calves every year. I think these values start to frame what values added from an AI approach. Real-world data from both Show Me Select Heifer Program and Thompson Steers is similar in many ways. It was spooky just how similar it is to that academic approach in terms of the value we're seeing in the real world of $125 increase in profitability over selling them as calves in terms of the Thompson Steers, and then the $800 spread between the highest quality SMS bred heifers in Oklahoma City. So taking both approaches yield very similar approach or very similar results. Again, I come back and I go, record profitability in the cattle industry, yay. I mean, it's all something to be very happy about, because it wasn't that many years ago that we were talking about maybe the other end of the spectrum. But now is the time to invest. And does a focus on AI programs provide a cow herd that, frankly, me as a lender might be more interested in lending money to? Certainly worth more, but also a risk mitigation strategy. And the data certainly seems to point that's the case. You know, as I kind of wrap, I like the first two other talks in this section, because I think they both said it pays. There's not that much cost to an AI program. And all I really say is that the better genetics that you get as a result of a very targeted program certainly provides more value to the industry. So I promised that I would stay on time and make sure that I wrap by 5:15. So thank you all very much.